Hello, I'm Rabbi Iggy, and welcome to Tattoos and Torah. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tattoos and Torah. Thank you for joining us. As always, I'm Rabbi Iggy out of the Tshuva Center. We have a guest today. I'm excited for this conversation. We have today with us Dr. Lakshmi Naik, who are going to talk about healing journeys and integrative health and trauma and all good things that sort of that lead us in our quest to find a life of meaning and finding more healing and more growth for all of us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful introduction. Very touching. Thank you.
Thank you. So where should we start? You're a doctor, right? Sort of. But really, that is just one part of your journey and one part of sort of like what kind of you bring into this sort of healing journey. So walk us through it.
Yeah, you know, grew up in a very spiritual household since I was a child. And this predisposition to the healing journey came not as much from a scientific perspective as from kind of the caring healing journey perspective for patients. And, you know, I was gradually inclined towards science in high school anyway. And in 11th grade in high school, I just knew I wanted to be a physician. It wasn't anything intellectual. It was just clear. It was simply clear to me that that is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be involved in people's healing journeys and healing processes. And I went into medicine. And in medical school, I really enjoyed medical school. I enjoyed, connecting with patients, seeing a multitude of cases. And I decided to go into emergency medicine, very intense specialty. And I trained in New York at some of the toughest neighborhoods up in the Bronx and Queens, and got some phenomenal training because the emergency department is unlike any other field, I feel like. You know, you see every socioeconomic status, you see every race, you see every possible diagnosis from, you know, overdoses to homeless people to the wealthiest of the people having heart attacks to everything. So it gave me a really amazing perspective on life. But at the same time, it showed me how fragile life was. Because I would be coding patients. I would, you know, I remember one night in my residency training, I think I put 8 people on a ventilator in one night. Wow. And it was just intense kind of training for 4 years. So it really brought me closer to my own mortality, my own death, my own kind of process. And very spiritual, in fact. Many of these moments were very spiritual. I'm getting tears as I speak. The turning point for me was I was in New York as a first responder for 9/11. And that, again, kind of catapulted me into a life situation where I had lost several friends that were first responders. And I moved to Georgia, you know, with my family. It was just a family decision. When I moved here, I practiced emergency medicine in Atlanta for many, many years. And the spiritual journey took this incredible turn in 2010. I was in the emergency department, and there was a woman in front of me having a heart attack. As she's having a heart attack, and I'm the doctor taking care of her, my legs went numb below my knees, completely numb. And I'm standing there like, what is happening? There's somebody having a heart attack. My legs are going numb. Am I having some sort of a stroke or some sort of subconscious anxiety attack? Like, what's going on? And I stopped. I took a breath. And there was a covering doctor in the ER. They usually 2 of us overnight.
Right.
And I called my colleague over. I said, look, this is what's happening. I don't think it's safe for me to take care of this patient. Something's wrong. I need you to take over because it's an emergency. She's having a heart attack. So, you know, she took over and I went home. My senior boss came in to cover me and I'm sitting at home with my legs numb, not really knowing what this is. And, you know, just being in medicine, I kind of know different diagnoses. I'm like, this doesn't seem like a stroke. Let's figure this out. Right. And I ended up going to many physicians, you know, over the next couple of weeks. And I ended up having this rare condition, which is autoantibodies to my potassium ion channels, discovered by a rare neurologist at Johns Hopkins after I ran all my blood tests. It occurs in 1 in 1 million women. And it's the rarest of rarest conditions. Huh. And there's nothing you can do about it. And it makes your legs go numb. That's one of the...
Right.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Like forever or just sporadically?
It just comes and goes sporadically. I mean, this was after they did tons of MRIs and CAT scans and lumbar punctures and different EMGs and tests to figure out what was going on with my legs. And a brilliant neurologist from Johns Hopkins, I was referred to, ran this test and found this rare condition. And it can go into remission or it can get worse. There's no cure for it. And if it gets worse, they go through many different treatments. And I went to my rheumatologist and he wanted to throw, you know, a bunch of medicines at me.
Right.
And I said, this is the defining moment for me. This is a defining moment because do I take the conventional medicine route or do I heal through all, you know, my history of growing up in a traditional Indian household where we grew up with herbs, where I had such an incredible spiritual upbringing. My parents were following different monks. And, you know, as I was growing up, I was exposed to a lot of things. And I said, this is the moment where I need to decide which direction I'm going to take. And there's nothing wrong with combining both directions.
Right.
But at that point, for me, I had to pick a direction and I picked integrative and holistic medicine. And I started researching and I started healing my gut. I started taking different concoctions of herbs, turmeric, ashwagandha, neem, started doing research on traditional Indian therapies like Ayurveda. There's actually, the oldest medicine is actually called Siddha medicine. And Siddha medicine.
Is it called again? Sorry, say again?
It's called Siddha medicine.
Siddha medicine. Okay.
It's one of the oldest forms of medicine in the world.
Right.
And it's actually using elemental mercury to heal.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, mercury is considered toxic in the West, primarily because it's oxidized mercury. Right. But elemental mercury is highly therapeutic. And so I, you know, basically figured out different protocols, started researching, calling around, and then I healed myself to the point where the disease was no longer detectable.
Huh. But were you still having symptoms or no?
No, everything gone. And what I noticed was at the same time as I was healing through these herbs and different protocols, I knew I needed a mind-body shift. All those years in the emergency department, all the trauma I'd seen, all those intense situations, there was definitely something wrong with my mind-body-energy piece. And so I started to pursue yoga and meditation. What I noticed scientifically was in the West, yoga was more laid out as a physical exercise process. Whereas in the East, it was addressing the energies of the human being. And yoga simply means union of the mind and body. It simply means union. And so the concept of the energies being stabilized and addressed is very important in the East. The West sort of approaches recovery and healing from a perspective of the mind and from the perspective of psychology, seeing a psychotherapist, talking in groups, right? So the East goes a little bit further and says, let's put the mind and psychology at one level, but let's go deeper and address the energies. And so therefore you have the arts of Reiki and Ayurveda and, you know, Chinese herbal medicine, acupunctures, and mainly I turn toward Kriya Yoga, which is a deep form of energetic yoga taught by certain masters. And there are different foundations in America that teach different forms of Kriya Yoga. All are wonderful. For me, I specifically went towards Isha Foundation in Tennessee, and that is their course is called Inner Engineering. And the founder of Isha Foundation is Sadhguru, who is an iconic, world-renowned master. And I learned the technique there, and that was just a game changer at that point.
How when you say game changer, what does that mean in terms of both your own spiritual journey, but also your body and what that meant for you?
Yeah, so the game changer was at a very superficial level, basic changes. My sleep was deeper. My appetite was, for some reason, decreased. I noticed changes in my body that were like I was calmer in situations. There was a distance between my thought and my response to the person. There was just basic physiologic changes I was noticing in myself, you know, hunger signals, sleep signals, my mood. I wasn't as irritable. I was much calmer. Yeah, just basic physiological stuff. Then there was like this deeper level of perception, of clarity that I didn't have before. So it's I'm trying to put it in words. It's difficult to explain in words in a way because it was a level of perception that I didn't have before. So in the emergency department, if someone said to me, I'm having chest pain, I would sit there and say, okay, they're having chest pain. Let's go through everything. 1, 2, 3. Now the level of clarity was, after all this, you know, sort of inner work and, you know, doing Kriya Yoga, was if the person said, I have chest pain, my level of analysis was much deeper. It's not just physiologic chest pain. Is this person grieving? Is this person having trauma? It was a much more sensitive layer of perception of the person's level of process. I was much more connected to people than I've ever been.
Right. It's interesting as you say that because, right, so like one of the, so a lot of the people who listen to our podcast, right, we're a lot of people in recovery, right, recovery from addiction and right, and we talk a lot about how the opposite of addiction is connection, right? That in that sense, sort of like as you're describing it, right, so like it sounds like, and I don't want me to reduce it, but like, right, being more in tune with your own self, being more in tune with your own body, with your own psychology, with your own, right, makes you more perceptive and more in tune with others, right? And understanding that, and presumably that makes you a better teacher, better partner, better mother, better father, right? Like better physician, right? So like that attunement to, right, to others' energy, for lack of a better term, makes us better caregivers.
100%. And we're all really one, right? That's what the masters sort of teach us. It's just some of us potentially got lost on the way. And the masters are here to sort of show us the way back. And, you know, even in recovery and addiction, and I'm not a addiction specialist, but I do, you know, help patients sort of guide them in their recovery process to the right modalities that may hasten their recovery quickly. And, you know, even in addiction, for example, you know, there's many layers to addiction. You know, one is psychological. Is it trauma-based, right? One is physiological. Right. There's an actual craving for the substance because there's a physiological adaptation to it. And then there's an energetic component. There's a deep level of the chakras and disbalance that occurs that manifests in these two dimensions of mind and body. Mm-hmm. And so to get to that layer, I have found, and Gabor Mate is one of the gurus of trauma work and stuff, and you know, they've often talked about, you know, yoga and Kriya Yoga is a deep form of healing for people. That's just one modality, of course. But
No, that's the thing, right? So like, I think that for all these things, right, and this is why this is, I think, fascinating, is that when we're looking at being holistic, right? That means really truly being holistic means I have to look at everything. I have to look at your blood levels. I have to look at I have to look at the neurological sort of responses, but I also have to look at like Why are you feeling and why are you thinking and where does the trauma come from? And are you aligned with your body? Are you aligned with your soul? Right. So like for I know this sort of like for a lot of people in medicine, right? That conversation is kind of taboo, right? Because we're talking about the body, we're not talking about the soul. But I think as caregivers, we understand that the healing occurs only partially in the body, right? And that sort of an unhealed or a soul that's not on the journey towards healing, right, will only get so far.
I absolutely believe, and I feel like, you know, 80% of illnesses can be potentially cured if we address the foundational aspect of it, right? Like the base energetic piece of it, because manifestations of autoimmune disease, people who are overweight, whether it's addiction recovery, a lot of it is deeply psychologically trauma-based. And you need multi-level layers to that in terms of psychotherapy, group therapy, 12-step, all of that sort of plays in.
And medicine, right? And sometimes medicine,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah. And in terms of conventional medicine, you know, the physicians that were trained of our generation truly want to heal holistically. Right. They really do. That's their intention. The system has gotten corrupted because the insurance companies will not let them practice the way they want to practice. They don't get enough time to connect with their patients. And the entire medical school curriculum, you know, we got like, I think 1% of our curriculum was nutrition training. We got no training in nutrition. And as I'm practicing now, you know, obviously we, in the healing process, we address the basic layers of lifestyle medicine. How much are you sleeping? What are you eating? And I'm trying to remember the nutritional studies, you know, about how they went into prisons and they changed the diet of the prisoners and the amount of violent crime went down. Yeah. There's significant data on how much the violent crime came down.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, and we discussed before, right, that I spent time in India, and I remember, learning the first time, this is close to 20 years ago, right, about sort of what I would reduce to say like as yin and yang food, right? So like foods that sort of that are more energetic and foods that are more sort of like draining, right? And sort of like and thinking about food as energetic sort of like elements, not just sort of caloric elements of things. And I think it's interesting because I think in the Western world, we're now just learning that not all calories were made, right? We're born the same, we're born equal, right? And sort of thinking about the kind of food. But I would say that this sort of expands more than just food. I think, right, this is about our consumption, the things that we consume, right? The food that we consume, the things that we read, the things that we watch, the time we spent on our phones, the time we spend in our books, the time we spend with people, right? That what we consume manifests itself in the body in a way that requires us to put attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. There's many layers of consumption. And, you know, consumption leads to potential habit formation. And if it's deep enough, it can lead to an addiction, right? So there's many different forms. There's now cell phone addiction, technology addiction, shopping addiction. I struggle with my own addiction tendencies. I struggled with some trauma as a child. And I saw many of that aspects of that in me. And, you know, for me, obviously, this path helped. To get over that, but I have to constantly be aware, right? Because healing is like a forever journey, right? It's every day, it's every moment. And circling back to, I'm trying to think about what aspects to address. We talked about so much.
My question is, right, so one of the things that drew me to this conversation is the dealing with our trauma. But what I'm always sort of drawn to is, yes, that's important, right? I think that's really, really important to do. But the role that our body, right? Yoga, meditation, right? Intentionality, sort of how do we use those towards healing parts of our trauma, right? Because right, in recovery, we know, right? This has been researched multiple times, right? That sort of that I would say that 99.999% of all the people that we encounter in addiction recovery, 99% of them have suffered trauma in early stages of life, right? Sort of like emotional trauma, spiritual trauma, physical trauma, sexual trauma, right? Abuse of all kinds. That has been researched sort of like through and through. But sort of how do we support our healing through, right, these modalities that so many people would dismiss as woo-woo, right, would dismiss as unimportant?
So that's the beauty of integrative medicine, right? One problem requires a multimodal approach. There's absolutely nothing wrong with psychotherapy and medication management in the acute setting. Now, if you tell me, you know, Prozac is the answer for the next 30 years of your life, I will disagree with that because, you know, the data on antidepressants has been only 1/3 effective long term. Okay. So we now need to have a fundamental shift because the Prozac is suppressing or addressing the symptoms. It's not addressing the source of the symptoms. Right. So absolutely, there's nothing wrong with conventional medicine and psychotherapy. We can have that in place, but at the same time, what we need to do is one, address all the lifestyle issues that you're struggling with, basic stuff, you know, nutrition, sleep, your relationships, things that are sabotaging your recovery at the basic fundamental sort of level. At the next level, you can always go towards other integrative modalities. Will hypnosis work for you? Will CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, work for you? Will dialectical behavioral therapy work for you? Do we need to look at IFS, which is internal family systems? It's a different level of analysis of, you know, family systems. Are we doing trauma work? Are we doing Kriya yoga? Are we doing plant medicine? If the level of addiction is very high, the rates of recovery with potentially ayahuasca and certain plant medicines, depending on the psychology of the person. Again, it's very important to go to a practitioner and make sure this is the right path for you, because I don't blanketly recommend plant medicine for everybody. If the person has some baseline schizophrenia or some bipolar disorder and an addiction issue, I would probably recommend against it, depending on their psychological profile. So I'm very careful when I recommend these modalities. But the rates of recovery are very high with certain profile of plant medicine. So, you know, there you have it. And, you know, you can ultimately, you know, potentially go deeper. Medically now, there's IV ketamine therapy, you know, depending on the level of trauma you have. And I work, you know, very closely with a psychiatrist that does IV ketamine therapy. And we're able to go into states of dissociation from, you know, just from conscious mind to unconscious mind and tag those memories and start healing. Right. So it's a very multimodal approach. And so if you go to an integrative practitioner that you find, a plan needs to be laid out, you know, step one, step two, step three, how are we integrating all these different modalities for your recovery?
Right.
And we'll come up with a game plan because you and I both know this is going to take time.
Right.
And, you know, healing is not a race, guys.
Right.
It's not a race, you know.
It can be. Right.
Yeah. I mean, oh, am I going to heal by tomorrow? And
mostly because there's no there. There's no finish line. Right. Yeah. So there's always that. When somebody comes to you, right, when somebody says, hey, I need help, what are the kind of questions or narrative or – like, how do you, quote unquote, diagnose their spiritual crisis? Like, what do you employ? And I'm asking this because a lot of people sort of like say to themselves, they listen to this, like, right, okay, but how do I know where I am spiritually? How do I know if I am spiritually bankrupt? How do I know if I need to do more work? Right. So, like, what kind of modalities do you think of when sort of people come to you to try and understand where they are and where in the plan you want to build with them?
Yeah, I mean, mostly I'm treating patients medically, right? And so a lot of people come to us for primarily hormones and weight loss and diabetes and hypertension, the basic stuff.
Right.
Spirituality is a deeply intimate thing for a person. And so I'm a little bit careful to approach that in the first conversation, in the first meeting. Right. Most of my first appointments usually begin with chanting, silence, or prolonged breath work. And I always ask them, I said, if you would like to just jump into the appointment, that's completely fine. This is your time and your space. And almost always they'll want to start the appointment with silence or breath work. That seems to be, interestingly enough, more than chanting, that seems to be the request, because I'm noticing, you know, we are living in a fight or flight state most of the time, because we're go, 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 go. And so when they come into the appointment, this is the first time they're slowing down, they're catching their breath, they're with themselves. And, you know, if the conversation goes that way, you know, even with obesity medicine and weight loss, you know, 50% of Americans are going to be obese by 2030. That's the projected number, 50%. Right. Okay. These are the numbers we're dealing with. And so, you know, obesity is also definitely some level of trauma-based disorder, aside from nutritional deficiencies and different things we can get into. But it's a complex disorder. There's definitely, you know, as we delve deeper into their condition, you know, usually the second or third appointment things come out. You know, my father was very cruel to me. So I had a man who had significant bad cholesterol profile and chest pain. All his workup was negative. And as you get deeper into his history, the second and third appointment, he goes, you know, his father was a very abusive man. And even now when he goes into the room near his father, his chest starts to tighten up. Mm-hmm. And you know, this comes out later. So he comes to me medically for a certain thing, but it then ends up being something else. Right. And a lot of times people don't know how to process their emotions because they never have, and they don't know what they're going through. And it takes a sort of a trained clinician to point out to them that, you know, hey, listen, your food addiction, or I don't like using that term, but for the lack of a better word, you know, this is due to the fact that you're soothing your pain.
Right.
You know, you're soothing your pain. You're soothing that part of you that wants to heal so badly, but just doesn't know how.
Right.
And now you're using this mechanism to self-harm.
Right.
Because if you've never experienced something so incredibly unloving, then if this is your understanding of love and soothing, that is what you're going to go to.
Of course. Of course.
Right. So, you know, it's incredibly interesting to see the responses and to see the healing journeys of different people. But the idea of going to a proper, you know, trained integrative provider, and I hope, you know, everyone, whoever is seeking one, goes to someone, is to fasten that journey up in the least, you know, sort of damaging, self-damaging way to yourself, you know, to get you there quicker. It's like if you're going from, you know, New York to California, you want to take a direct flight, right? You don't want to do two steps to get there.
That's true. Although, right, sometimes life just makes you stop no matter what, right? So, like, right, and you have to pay attention to that. Do you find, well, I guess my so like the relationship that sort of you have to your own spirituality, right? Your own healing. And how that translates into your work, right? You come from a line, as you said, from a family, a lineage of a very deeply spiritual background, right? And how does that help you? Or maybe it doesn't, right? How does that help you to do this? I can imagine, so like, it helps sort of like working with clients, but can also imagine, speaking for myself, that sometimes my empathy, right, sort of like is detrimental to me, right, because I feel everything, and sometimes, right, I take it like so it's not always great. Many times it's great, but sometimes it really isn't.
Yeah. So I think, you know, obviously the spiritual background helped form a really good foundation. I also studied religion in college very deeply. And I read the Quran, I read the Bhagavad Gita, I read the Bible, New and Old Testament. And so there was, yes, the spiritual foundation, but you know, really the spiritual part was the emergency room when I just saw human beings, real life, no books, just real life. You know, it was raw. Right. It was just raw life. And so everything sort of coming together, you know, propelled me into this process. And yes, for me, I'm deeply sensitive to people's pain. I'm an empath. I'm a complete empath. I can feel someone's pain, like physically, you know, I'm that sensitive to them. And so my process every day to stay, you know, stable, steady, and connected to myself is my Kriya Yoga. You know, I've done, you know, Sadhguru advanced programs. So, you know, my yoga every day, and I'm not saying everybody do this, but I'm just kind of, you know, saying.
I do yoga every day. So, I mean, I highly recommend it to people.
Yeah. So, you know, my Kriya Yoga process is typically about 3 hours a day minimum. So I do some advanced breath work. I do advanced asanas, which are postures, yogic postures. Right. I do a few ceremonies with fire. I do a lot of other, you know, kind of work to stay, you know, within myself, to stay stable, because I'm seeing a lot, I'm processing a lot of different things from different people.
Right.
And it's very important that we all, you know, figure out mechanisms in our day-to-day life. Is it going to be journaling? Is it forest bathing? Is it walking in soil? Which, by the way, that has become my latest focus this last month, is soil awareness.
Soil awareness?
Yeah. So I want to really, if your audience is listening, I would really love to plug consciousplanet.org and ishafoundation.org, because I really want to stress, it's Soil Awareness Month across the world also, just so people know.
What is that? Tell us a little bit about what soil
awareness is. Yeah. So our world's soil is being drastically depleted. We have maybe 2% organic content left in the soil. So if you don't have organic compost material, like, you know, from waste and plant waste in the soil, it turns into sand. And so in 20 years, we will not be able to feed about 3.54 billion people. The first state to go into drought in the United States is going to be Illinois. And there's going to be food issues, food production issues, food scarcity issues that are coming very soon and that people don't know about. And more than that, because I deal with nutrition a lot with patients, what I'm really seeing is, you know, now just due to regulatory issues and, you know, we have pesticides in our food and all this other stuff, but you need to now eat 8 oranges to get the benefit of 1 orange. Because the vitamin C, the vitamin E, vitamin A levels are down like maybe 20% available now. And so if we rejuvenate our soil, we will rejuvenate our minerals in our soil. It'll take us 10 years to turn this planet around if we all do it together. If you guys go on consciousplanet.org and Isha Foundation, ISHA Foundation.org, and we learn about soil awareness, this is going to be key. And we can just begin with our backyards, you know, just composting and rejuvenating our soil in our yards. But I don't know how we went from that to soil, but I'm just passionate about. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of put it out there because that's also part of the healing journey. The earth, you know, the sun and walking barefoot on the, you know, earth and being connected to nature. That's the other thing that tremendously helps, just by the way, in my healing. I just... is nature. Like every single week, I have to be in the forest or in the mountain for like hours. I go like for a long hike on Sundays and I'm just silently in nature. And the second thing is water. I have to swim once a week because I like water. Now, why is this important? Because all human beings are made up of only 5 things, 5 elements, which is water, fire, earth, air, and space.
I feel like I should be bursting into song because I feel like, right, earth, right, like, you know, like, you know, the band.
Right. Right. So our body, when we die, we go back to the earth, right? I mean, we're just matter, right?
Yes. No, we believe what that in fire? Our tradition as well, right? In Jewish tradition, that's sort of, right, earth to earth, yeah. Right? So that's sort of that we believe that we are all part of this sort of, like we know in science that there's no loss of any material. It just transforms, right? Energy just shifts, but there's no new atoms being formed, right? Everything we have is everything we have. We just need to transform the material from one thing to another, which is one of the reasons why we're all one, right? Because we carry so much transformation within ourselves of previous generations, of who we are, of our collective narratives. And basically, right, the stardust that sort of came to this planet and settled here.
Yeah. Absolutely. That concept of transformation from matter to energy and energy right. back to matter and not adding right. anything new element, that's definitely true. But sort of talking about the elements, yes, the body going back to Earth, and fire is really just your mitochondria burning ATP for energy. Okay. And this is sort of the science coming into it. And then our body is 2/3 water. That's why hydration is so key. And a lot of our body is space, right. essentially, right? Our universe, if you look, the galaxies, mostly space.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so the question is, in terms of the healing recovery process, I think being really connected to the earth and nature and the elements is very key. The more we can get away from technology, it's ironic because technology has connected the right. world so much, but at the same time, it's made us disconnected within ourselves.
So let me ask you that. I mean, I know it's not one thing, but again, both you and I come from like really long ancient traditions. So they teach this and have taught this for a long time, right? There's very new things, right? So like, right, the yogi masters, the Ayurvedic sort of like masters, right? The Aryan masters within the Indo River, right? Sort of like, right, the Judaism, the Torah, like all these things have been saying what we're saying in so many words for thousands of years. Why, as humanity,
correct.
Why are we still so, pardon me, so shit at it? Like, why are we still need people like me and you to scream this out and be like, right? Like, why are we so bad at listening? Why are we constantly ignoring, right? The planet, the holistic natures, the spirit, the signs. Why do we do this to ourselves?
You know, good question. It's just the framework of society. It's what we've been conditioned. It starts from when we're basically a child. You need to learn 1, 2, 3, ABC. You need to go through 18 years of formalized education to be someone, to earn something, to do something, and to have 10 diplomas on your wall, you know? And for what? The transformative process. It's fine to do all that. But the only real tangible thing in life is transformation. It's really transformation. So what is deeply touching? If I'm the same person and I don't change and I continue to be who I am, maybe potentially stuck in my thoughts, stuck in my ways for the next 50 years, yeah, maybe I'm okay within myself. But what if I transform into somebody who's deeply loving, deeply accepting, helping people heal through their journeys because I'm transforming myself and I've transformed now the lives of so many people around me. Now that's real substance, right? That's something that no diploma will reflect. And so that's really tangible. Why are we like this? You know, obviously dollars and money control corporations and those corporations with money control policies, whether it's pharma, whether it's pesticides or food. A large percentage of the world is starving and there's no need for starvation because food production and food dispensing is controlled by the dollars and the corporations. And so that sort of sets the stage for the mechanistic view of society. You don't need to go to a corporation. Our homes have become corporations. Mm. Right? As parents, we want our kids, they need to do this many sports, go to this college, this degree. We've become, you know, as parents, we've become subconsciously trained to make our children produce. Right. And if the production is not there, their worth is not there. And, you know, a child's worth is linked to production. So conscious parenting is like the foundation of where this all starts. Because we have now let, you know, these just the subconscious messages that we're getting from, you know, like I said, you know, big corporations or whatever, and sort of seeping into society. It seeps into the house. It seeps into the children. It just sort of seeps from above. And a lot of it, when you look at the cultures and the religions, and when you look at spirituality, a lot of times that approach in terms of Kriya Yoga simply has been that you have layers of lifetimes of karmic energy. Karma is simply just conditioned memory from thousands and thousands of lifetimes. And basically, you know, 95% of our daily operations. So even this conversation that I'm potentially having with you, 95% of that is coming from memory, trauma, and conditioning. So 5% of me, if that, is potentially conscious, present conversation that I'm actively making. So, you know, to break all that conditioning, break everything sort of that we've been taught, that we've been stuck in, takes a lot of self-work.
Are we afraid of transitioning? Are we afraid of growing, of evolving?
I mean, it's scary, right? The unknown is always scary. The unknown is always scary. The known is always safe, secure. It's what you know. It's what we all know. And so, you know, this path to transformation is, you know, I've been through the dark places of my life myself, you know, pretty dark, pretty lonely, deeply painful. And through the grace of my master, the grace of all the work I've done, I've come out on the other side. You know, I'm still healing. I'm still in the process of healing, of course, but I know what that space feels like. And it's a palpable pain. And I just want to reach out, because I guess that's, you know, part of your audience, that keep going on the journey and keep, you know, searching and keep working on yourself, because as you do that, the transformative process unfolds. Transformation is not like, hey, you know what? I'm going to journal for 10 years and I'm going to do Kriya Yoga for 10 years because it's going to lead to my transformation. That's not the reason I do it. The reason I do it is simply because it helps heal me within myself, and transformation happens.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I understand.
Sort of.
But let me ask you this. So, because a lot of people, right, in recovery get to this place where it gets difficult again. And in that sense, right, here you are, you're a doctor, you're a healer, you're a mother, you're, right, you're coming from this tradition, right, the yoga thing. And when those dark moments come, right, what do you say to yourself, right, to move through, right? Because there must be, as it is for me sometimes, right, the moment is like, am I still dealing with this shit? Like, what, like, right, doing everything I can, like, what else, right? You put your face to the universe and be like, what else do you want from me? Right? I'm doing, like, how do you, what kind of conversation you have with yourself when those moments arise? Because I think for a lot of people in recovery, a lot of seekers, a lot of people who are in healing, right? There are those lull moments where you're like, this again?
Yeah, no, definitely. I also just want to correct something, which is consciously in my own process, while I use the word, I don't consider myself a healer. What I do consider myself as is a conduit for a person to heal themselves, because I truly believe that every human being has the ability to heal themselves. I'm just there because I just happen to know some tools and some medicines and some things that I give you the information, and you have the decision to heal your own life in the way you want to heal your life. So I'm sort of a conduit in the healing journey. So I only say that within myself just to stay humble.
No, I was about to say, but but people who come to you, for them, you are the healer. I mean, I understand the humility, right? But like, and I'm not saying this is sort of like, oh, I can heal you, right? I think when I say healer is that I'm not going to heal you. I'm going to help you find the tools to help you heal yourself, right? But that doesn't make me any less of a healer, because I am the path maker.
You're right in one sense. However, I only reframe that because when people are feeling that hopeless, like, oh shit, am I still here after 20 years? How did I get back here? It just takes a second to get back there. The only thing I say to myself is I'm the same like everybody else in the healing journey. The only thing I say to myself is, Lakshmi, this is thousands of lifetimes of karma, trauma. It's going to take time. And the only thing I say to myself compared to 20 years ago is that I have unconditional love for myself. No matter if I end up homeless in the street, there is this unconditional acceptance that I am perfect just the way I am. I don't need to be a physician. I don't need to be anything. One of the greatest things my master ever said, and it changed my entire being. I just shake when I think of this. Some woman got up in front of him and said, you know, I did recovery. I built a business. She was, you know, a CEO. She had actually had an addiction history, went through recovery, recovered, you know, obviously. In her mind, she'd recovered and she traveled the world and created corporations and was a millionaire and did all these different things. And in the middle of her life, she went to my master. It was a big group satsang meeting. And she said, I feel empty. I've done everything. I've recovered. I feel empty. And she said to him, what is my purpose in life? What is my purpose? And he turned to her and said, why do you think life has a purpose? Why are we just not perfect just the way we are? A tree is not sitting there saying, am I perfect today? What's my purpose? A tree is just perfect the way it is. It's just living life. Just live life. Just be present. There's no need to be anywhere, be anybody, do anything. If there's that unconditional, deep, deep love for yourself, it's almost like the addiction falls away. It's not even like you're trying to recover. It's like the addiction sort of falls away because you find this deep purpose and love for yourself that it can't match anything else. And that's all I can say, you know?
How do you remind yourself of that every day? How does one help oneself cultivate that love? Because so many of us, so many people do not feel that they can love themselves. A lot of that, or they don't feel that they're worthy of that love.
Childhood conditioning, deep emotional abuse. And it doesn't have to take a lifetime of abuse. A parent can say one word and 30 years later, you know, it's in the memory.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it was Eckhart Tolle. He once said in his book that, you know, if your father, if I'm quoting him correctly, incorrectly, forgive me, but I think it was to the level that he said, you know, if your father was Jesus Christ and your mother was Mary, you'd still be traumatized. And I just chuckled because you still have to live in the world. You could have a perfect family with the most loving parents and you'll be exposed to some trauma because you're in the world. And yeah, you're human. You're going to be exposed to something. And so...
Because you're human.
How do I stay in that space? It's definitely, definitely my practices. I mean, I think in this journey, my non-negotiables are absolute sort of that love for myself that comes automatically through my yoga. So it's not like I keep saying to myself, I love myself, I love myself. Because for me, the deep sense of self doesn't require self-confidence. It doesn't require self-love. Right. The self is just an immense thing on its own, you know? So for me, it's sort of like the love happens.
Right.
And the love is sort of, my love is also transformed over the years. It's not an emotional love. It's not an attachment love. It's not a codependent love. It's just an unconditional acceptance of everybody just the way they are. That's the love it's sort of transformed into. And my yoga has really helped me do that. No expectation of anyone or anything. And creating that space and recovery for that person is absolutely everything. To know that even in the deepest state of addiction, that I love you just the way you are and that you're perfect just the way you are. And that there is an innate power within you to heal and to access that power. Right? is going to take all these different modalities. And Kriya Yoga is one way that I got there very quickly.
I love that. That's a great thing. This has been fascinating, really, truly. And I love that. So like, right. So like the finding the modality within the self-healing. Last parting thoughts or I don't know, best practice truth, right? Things that sort of like things that everybody should know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, trust yourself and trust that voice, trust your intuition. It's there and it will take you the right direction. If you deeply, quietly listen to it and sit in silence and, you know, find that space. If anyone in your audience is interested in pursuing the yoga that I have, that has transformed my life, it's you can go on ishafoundation.org or ishausa.org, or you can Google inner engineering. Inner engineering is the course that is Kriya-based that sort of transformed my life. And feel free to reach out to me. I'm in Atlanta. My practice is called Spectrum Integrative Health. And it's Spectrum, I as in India, health.com. And, you know, I speak to people all over the country and, you know, just sort of guide them in what direction to go because they see many different practitioners and they're just not getting the results they want or heal. And they say, hey, you know, what do you think I should do? So thank you for this time. I appreciate it.
No, thank you for this time and thank you for all this conversation and a piece of advice. It resonates very deeply. And Dr. Lakshmi, thank you really so much, really, truly. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We're Tattoos and Torah. We'll see you next week. This podcast was recorded by Tshuva Center. I want to thank our team, Ben Lichman, Grace Sheed, and Sadie Baker-Wax, who make this all possible and make sure that the guests and I sound as best we can. Thank you all for listening. Chag Sameach.